Hey, it's Jenny Nash, founder and CEO of Author Accelerator. I hear so many people tell me that book coaching sounds like their dream job and they wish they could do it, but they can't because fill in the blank. They don't have an agent. They haven't written a bestseller. They don't have a PhD. They weren't an English major. They don't know enough about the publishing industry, whatever the thing is. And I can tell you that I see people overcome these things every single day. I have a presentation on this, on imposter syndrome. It's the single biggest barrier keeping most people from saying yes to their dream job. Come check it out at bookcoaches.com/imposter. That's bookcoaches.com/imposter.
Is it recording?
Now it's recording.
Yay.
Go ahead.
This is the part where I stare blankly at the microphone and try to remember what I'm supposed to be doing.
All right, let's start over.
Awkward pause. I'm going to wrestle some papers.
Okay.
Now 1, 2, 3. Okay.
Hey, writers. Serena Bowen here with a new episode of Am Writing, the podcast about writing all the things. Short things, long things, fiction, nonfiction, pitches, and proposal. Each week, either me, KJ, Jess, or Jenny are here with new material for you, and hopefully you are subscribed to our Substack as well, so you can get those things even when they're written. And today it's Jenny and me hanging out with a special idea for you, and I'll turn it over to Jenny.
Thank you and welcome, everyone. I'm so excited to be co-hosting the podcast now and excited to be here today with Serena. I'm the CEO and founder of Author Accelerator, and I am a giant reader and a writer of all the things too, and love learning from my co-hosts and talking about all the things. And this is a really special idea this week that came from something I saw Serena say on Facebook. So let's get to it. We're talking about a really interesting thing that I heard you say, Serena, on Facebook about where the idea for your new forthcoming novel is coming from. So before we get to that nugget and talk about that, this book is called The 5-Year Lie. It's coming out in May 2024. Can you tell us a little bit about it without giving anything away?
Well, you know, because the hook of the book is strong, and that's our topic for today, maybe I should just tell you the story of how I got this hook.
Oh, I like it. That's the thing I read that I was like, ooh, this is so juicy.
Well, it is juicy is the thing. So I have this fun author friend named Lauren Blakely, and she's a really good friend and a wonderful person. And years ago, and I do mean years, like in 2019, she and I decided to collaborate, and we wanted to write a book together, and we eventually did. It's called The Best Men. It's darling. But we needed an idea, and we did not have one. And so we're tossing around ideas, as one does. And she said, well, okay, listen, this wild thing happened to me. A couple months ago, I got this text from my friend, but it didn't make any sense. And it turns out she got a text from me that didn't make any sense. And we could not figure out what the heck, like, did our phones just randomly text each other in a conversation? This is bonkers. So it turns out that there was a system-wide texting outage where some tens of thousands of customers just never received texts from a certain date in 2018 or 2019. And it made a little news, basically, a little tiny news stories. If you search for this right now, you'll be able to find it. And the cell phone carriers blamed the tower, and the tower blamed the cell phone carriers, and there's no good explanation for what happened. And she said, so maybe that's the takeoff of our book. So we talked about it for a little while, but we couldn't land on a plot we liked because we were trying to write a romance that made sense for this weird little thing that happened. Missed connections, blah, blah, blah. We couldn't get there. But it stuck with me so much that I couldn't stop thinking about it. And honestly, I let like 2 years go by because I'm a really slow developer of book ideas. And then I had it. I called her back and I'm like, hey, Lauren, you know, that thing you told me about the text, and are you going to use that? Because I think that's a thriller in the making. You know, what if the text you got that random Monday was from a dead man?
What?
And what if he... Yeah. And what if he was the father of your four-year-old, but he disappeared 5 years ago? And what if this text that hits your phone changes everything you thought you knew about the day he disappeared? And she said, use it. Use it and tell me when it works and I'll buy the first copy. So I did. A couple years ago, I sold on proposal The 5-Year Lie to HarperCollins. And this is a big transition for me. It was, I have pretty much only written romance novels, and this is a thriller with kind of a romantic hook, but it's still a thriller. And yeah, so not only was that idea really important to me coming up with the story for this, but it's also a great flap copy hook. And that is why when I wanted to use this idea, I went back to her and I asked her permission to do so.
I have so many questions. Okay.
Okay.
So I'm going to go back to the beginning. So when you were noodling around with Lauren on this idea, did you at that point like go home and Google it? Like you said, you can Google it and find this news story. Like, did you go so far as to get some intel?
I did, except there's so little about it. It was like a 3-paragraph news item.
Okay. So you did a tiny bit of research and you said that you couldn't make a plot out of this anecdote or incident or thing. And I think that's a really important part of this because so many people have ideas like this, little nuggets of things that are interesting or coincidental or creepy or whatever the thing is. And they think that that means they have a novel idea. And
right.
You're very clear that this is the hook, but it's not the plot. So
right.
Can you talk a little bit about why couldn't you get a plot? Why couldn't you and Lauren get a plot? And then we'll talk about the difference between a hook and a plot. So can you remember why you guys couldn't get there with the book you were writing?
Well, sure. Because we were definitely writing a romance. And a romance has to be uniquely focused on the couple. And every way we could think to use this hook in a romance had to do with separating a couple and not bringing a couple together. And of course, I mean, I could tell you 5 ways to get around that right now, but we just didn't like any of them.
Right.
Like none of them said, yeah, I really want to spend 3 months minimum of my life on this idea.
So it didn't work as a plot, but it stuck with you as a hook. So
right.
it's in your brain and it won't leave your brain. And while in those 2 years, were you thinking, I got to find a plot to go with this? Or did it just come up in your mind as a good hook?
I would think about it off and on. And of course, I eventually realized that I was just in the wrong genre, that it was a thriller plot. And then I also wanted to write suspense, so I was writing other suspense ideas in my plot notebook. And sometimes, I do this a lot actually, like I think of good hooks, but they don't have plots behind them. And some days I think of good plots, but they don't have hooks in front of them. And it just takes a while to sync those things together. It's not the first time that I've had like one and the other and then realized that they went together. So maybe I'm just slow, but it takes me a while to hook these things together. And it really fit with an important thing about this project, which is if you are switching genres, you had better have a big hook. I needed to hook a new audience with an idea. It had this sort of everyman appeal, like any one of us could get that startling text, you know, but it happened to her. So yeah, it just took me a while to figure out how it went together. And even then, and this is a fault of mine that this happens a lot, even when I figured out the plot that I wanted to put behind it and I started working, I mean, I wrote this proposal. The proposal had 16,000 words as a sample, which is actually like a pretty fat sample, it's a lot of chapters. Even then, when I started writing the actual book, I didn't know enough. I'm like, oh, I know what happens. Oh, shoot. I do not know what happens. So yeah, that was a real education. But.
So when you got the idea, you said you called Lauren because you had the idea. You brought the plot and the hook together. I this is the part of your story that I'm just completely fascinated by, because it's about this idea of who owns an idea. So you and your friend were working together. She told you this anecdote that happened to her or her friend. And so in a way, it's not your idea. And you were clear on that. And
yeah.
Sometimes it's not that clear whose idea was it, or you're brainstorming back and forth. But in this instance, it was clear this was hers. And so I want to ask about that. You felt you needed to ask her permission. Can you talk about why you felt that?
Sure. And yeah, this comes up a ton. Like, I was just working on another proposal today, and I sort of joked to myself that the plot was a little bit like Dirty Dancing. And then I laughed it off after 30 seconds because I realized that the one little thing that made me think that is just never going to hit anybody else that same way. Like, it's just not. But every time I've told anybody, like, if you have an idea and maybe I tell my husband, like, hey, did you hear this wild thing about this text message? People react differently to this hook than to just other random coincidences. And, so a few things. One is if I'd read it in the paper myself, like, first of all, this happened to like 30,000 people, and then it was in news items that circulated to another, let's just say 100,000 or 1 million people. So that's a lot of people who could have gotten this idea. So if I had read it in any of those places, no problem, right? It's just a thing I read in the paper. And in fact, that's where most of my ideas come from. I love weird little news items about stuff that happens to people. I jot them down all the time. But this was told to me in the context of a story idea as the basis of a novel. So of course it's hers to use ever. And the truth is, if you saw two thrillers on the table at Barnes & Noble with this same hook, you would think, oh, that's weird. So in this context, I knew that it was an asking permission situation, even though I could have tripped upon it in a news item. I didn't. And also, I would just like to say that there aren't that many people in my life that I could ask, are you okay if I use this? And believe them if they said yes. But this is one of the most generous, warm people I know in publishing, and we're close enough that if I asked her and she said yes so happily, that I just knew it was really okay, and I sent her a really fancy box of chocolates after I sold in a proposal.
Did you have any thought when you approached her? You're already invested in this idea. You've now aligned the plot and the hook. Were you worried that she might say no?
My only true fear is that she would say, well, actually, I'm working on that right now. You know what I mean?
Right.
But so if she said no, it would only be because she was really invested in this story idea. And sure, I was worried that I would ask her and she would say, actually, I am going to use that and here's how, but that's not what happened. And of course, I hadn't written a word when I asked this of her.
Right.
So it just, it was just lucky that she was happy to say, go ahead and do it.
So I'll circle back to the idea of who owns ideas in other situations. But this one, so it was clear it was hers and you asked her and she said yes. And then you wrote these 16,000 word samples. Now, selling a novel on proposal is very unusual. So the hook was a big part of that, right? Like you said, it would make good jacket copy.
Right. And indeed, the jacket copy that we landed on eventually is very much like the original jacket copy I submitted. Interestingly, in the jacket copy we landed on, we don't say why. We don't actually say that it's a tech glitch. And I wrestled with that because I, you know, once you're so deep inside of a story, it's sometimes hard to look at it from the outside and be like, wait, do I care if I know? You know, it's so hard to disentangle yourself from how you feel about the hook. So, but even when we went into this with my bold and wonderful agent, Molly Glick at CAA, who is just astonishing with her professionalism and her grasp of the market, I still felt like, who the heck is going to pay me to on proposal out of genre? I'm afraid this is never going to work. But Molly said, nope, it's going to work. And in fact, when I gave her some ideas, this was only one of four ideas. And it was the only one that was really suspense-y. And she picked this one. She's like, no, let's do that. Let's do the hard thing. Well, sure, we could sell a romance, but let's not. Let's pick this, you know, greater leap. And it's going to be amazing. So, and she was right. It worked. And part of that absolutely has to do that with the idea that it was a hooky story idea. And of course, the reason I could sell on proposal at all is just because we also brought them a big fat data sheet about how many books I've ever sold and the size of my email list and how many followers I have on Instagram and, you know, just all that resume stuff that you have to do if you want to convince somebody that you're a good business risk. So, you know, it was partly having a track record for finishing books on time and selling them. And it was partly the idea of the book itself.
So you go and you write this idea, and you don't have to answer this if it's going to give away too much. But what you said that you loved about the anecdote at the very beginning was that spine tingling moment that you get the text, that was what appealed to you. Were you able to capture that in the story? Do you think the story delivers that sort of the creepiness you wanted to?
I think it does. And in order to use that to its maximum, anybody can write a good setup. And the better the setup, the harder it is to follow through.
Tell me about that.
Okay, well, this is a thing that I've noticed in terms of, all right, let's say you want to set up a book where there are strange happenings in a house. And the big question mark of the book is it a haunting or is there something else going on? Well, that's a wonderful setup, right? Like, I want to know whether, you know, it's haunted or not. What's the big secret? But the bigger you set that up, the harder it is to land in an impactful way, because it has to be either one or the other, and you can only sort of teeter on that sharp edge for a certain number of pages before you answer the question. And this setup had that problem baked into it, because here's a text from a dead man. Was he really dead or not? And so I had to find a really exciting way to keep that question alive for, you know, pages and pages before we find out if he is or if he isn't. And in fact, I had to put up a Q&A on my website about this book because it is a departure for me. So the Q&A says, you know, is this thriller terrifying? Am I going to stay awake at night? And I had to sort of say, like, well, it is a thriller, but it's not Pet Cemetery either. Like, it's not a like for advanced readers only kind of a thriller. But and then, you know, is there a happy ending or not? And the answer on my website to that question is, you're either on this journey with me or you're not. Like, I'm sorry, but I'm not here to, you know, with a romance, you walk into a romance knowing that you're going to get a happy ending. But this book, there's no guarantees. And that's why it was so appealing to me. Like, I wanted to write a book where absolutely anything could go wrong. And that was the fun of it. But then it was my job to sustain the tension of that for, you know, the entire book. And I just wanted to write something that you couldn't put down until you found out the truth at the very end. And, you know, hopefully I've done that.
Well, people who are familiar with your books and your writing, who love you for the romance, also surely must be aware that you're an exceptionally good writer of people and of subtext and of dialogue and of scene and of tension and of all those things that will be in this book as well. So there's so much that you bring to a story beyond a guaranteed happily ever after. I don't know. I actually don't know the answer to the question. So I can't blow it. I will be in as much suspense as everyone else reading it. So, but you have a long history of great writing, and I don't know where I'm going with this.
Well, you know, it's funny how hard it was to take that hook and deliver, though, because, yeah. And it turns out that this book is about, it's about cybersecurity on some level. And this book is also about doorbell cameras and all the things that can go wrong with having one. And that none of that is reflected in the flap copy. Like, you need so much more than that original coincidence or hook or whatever, wherever you start your story. You need so much more than that meet cute to land it. And that's true of a romance too. Like, even if you can think of a really cute hook, I'm messing around with an idea about somebody who meets their guy by accidentally messaging him instead of retweeting them. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
And like in an awkward way is how they meet or whatever. And, you know, that is like a chapter. You can't get a book out of awkward, but you can get flap copy out of that. So, you know, it doesn't even matter what genre you're working in. You have to have a really big story that follows up that hook, or you don't have anything at all. And I suppose that's why there's been 4 years since I heard, it's actually more than 4 years since I heard this idea to landing on it. So,
wow. So back to this idea about ideas, have you ever had a situation where you had an idea and you were clear it was not yours? Like when is an idea not yours?
Wow. That's a wonderful flipping around of the question. I guess, so sometimes I do see a premise when I'm reading, you know, flap copy on Amazon or wherever, and I say, gosh, I wish I'd thought of that. And, it's often okay to think, what's my version of that? But, you know, you don't want to write a book with someone else's premise. Like, you don't really want that set up, because then you're just a copycat. And where's the fun in that? You know, just picking up somebody else's premise is not, it's not a good idea. And it's also just not the job. Like, the job is to write your own darn book.
Yeah.
And I'm actually really, I feel really strongly about this. Like, I won't even go into my reader group of 7,000 people and say, help me name the dog. Like, I just don't do that, because I feel like it's my job. Like, you know, it's my problem. So.
And it's sometimes, you talked about that walking into Barnes & Noble and there's two books on the table with the same premise or the same hook. And that does sometimes happen. And sometimes books come in waves. Like you'll see, why this year do we have 4 biographies of Lincoln? I remember there was a year where everybody seemed to be writing a Lincoln biography. I don't remember if it was an anniversary or, you know, something. But, you know, there's things that are in the air, or, you know, like, surely right now there are a lot of people writing about AI, and, you know, I'm not talking about with AI, but about it.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's things in the zeitgeist, and that's not what we're talking about here.
No. And in fact, the funny thing is if I did walk into Barnes & Noble and see two books with the same premise, I definitely do not think that one of those authors ripped off the other one.
Yeah.
I think that the collective, what we're all worried about as people, is really strong. And, when I see two books that are similar, I think, wow, that's either that's a coincidence or, well, sure, because we're all kind of worried about that.
Yeah.
Like, I just said that this thriller has elements of doorbell cameras in it, and I bet anything there's some other thriller coming out in May that has a doorbell camera plot, because we, you know, a lot of people have them, and it's a pretty interesting bit of voyeuristic technology on the front of your house. So, you know, it's just, the difference is not that we can't have two books that are similar, but that I, as a person who is proud to create things, doesn't ever do it on purpose. Like, that's the difference.
Interesting. So it doesn't matter. Let me see if I can ask this question. If you overheard that anecdote at a party or on a train or in a crowd of people, you would feel no obligation whatsoever to ask permission to use it. Because as you said, it was a news thing, right?
Uh-huh. Right. Yeah. I would quickly have Googled the news item and then be like, ooh, that's a good pick. That's a good thriller takeoff.
Right.
You know, I just saw a thriller that I marked down on my should read list about somebody who gets into the wrong Uber and dies or something. And I thought, like, oh, that's good. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Writing suspense makes you have weird ideas about, you know, what's good in the world. But so, you know, if somebody else wrote that same book, I wouldn't think that one of them copied the other.
Right.
It's just that I probably won't write a suspense novel that works that way because I saw it in someone else's book, you know?
Right. And have you ever had the experience as a writer where you felt that somebody, maybe this is going down a rabbit hole, took your idea or copied your idea or lifted something that you felt was yours? Like, do you feel ownership after you've written something on that idea?
Well, okay. First of all, I mostly think it errs the other direction, where there's often authors flipping out because somebody has a flap copy that sounds a little bit like theirs. And I roll my eyes because I think, well, you know, I bet yours wasn't the first book to use that premise either. You know, I feel like that's ignorance to assume that somebody else took your thing. But it happens a lot. There's a lot of people who would rather be angry than just assume that there was a coincidence. And I look askance at those people. But I did see a couple years ago, somebody used my title on a hockey romance for their hockey romance. And it was a phrase that wasn't a hockey phrase, but it was like a phrase in the common lingo. So that alone didn't bother me. However, I read the flap copy and the tropes were all exactly the same.
Uh-oh.
Like, the whole setup for the book was the same and the title was the same. And I'm like, okay, well, that's not cool. And then it's not, I was annoyed. And then I saw who wrote the book and I realized that that person has given me a cute little, it's like fairy lights in a jar with like shellacked words on the outside of it from a book in that same series. Like, she read my book. She loved my book enough to make a thing and give it to me. So the person who then made this book of her own with my same title and my same tropes as a setup clearly had read that book that I wrote. And I thought, that is so rude. And do you know what I did about it? Nothing. I was angry for half an hour and then I forgot about it and nothing ever, it didn't matter. Like, it doesn't matter to my life.
Yeah.
If somebody copies an idea from me, it doesn't actually harm me. So,
but it matters to your, I'm going to say, soul as a writer that you don't do that.
Exactly.
Right. So The 5-Year Lie, coming out in May, where can people find it? How can they engage with it? How are we going to find out what happens?
Well, Jenny, if we're lucky, it will be literally everywhere books are sold on May 7th, which is right around the corner. And if you go to my website, serenabowen.com, it's, you know, all over the place there on the front page, and you can find the full description. And, you know, we'll see. We'll see if this suspense detour of mine takes the streets by storm or not. And it sure was fun to write, and it sure was a fun idea, and I'm very glad that I did it.
It's so exciting. Well, I know you can also see the cover of The Five-Year Lie on your Instagram. It's a great cover and such a great premise, and I know I'm among the people that can't wait to find out what happens and feel that feeling you want us all to feel when we're in a thriller. So thank you about that, the origin idea of that idea. It's a great story.
Thank you.
All right, so now we have to say, did you want to say one more thing?
No, I was honestly going to say, until next week, we should keep our butt in the chair and our head in the game, because that's how we roll.
The Hashtag AmWriting podcast is produced by Andrew Perella. Our intro music, aptly titled Unemployed Monday, was written and played by Max Cohen. Andrew and Max were paid for their time and their creative output because everyone deserves to be paid for their work.
Save. Pause. Stop.
Thank you.